Stephen Sander, CEO of the Associated General Contractors of America. And we're going to be talking about the PRO Act. It seems, at least when I was a kid, we all wanted to go pro. But that may be a little more loaded this time around. Would that be your assessment here?
Yeah, that's right, Carl. The PRO Act stands for Protect the Right to Organize, and which means basically reaffirming a statutory right that everyone has in the United States, which is to organize and bargain collectively with their employer. However, this bill goes way beyond reaffirming that statutory right.
It would seem interesting to me that someone with the Associated General Contractors of America would not consider something like this to be a good idea. You, however, think it just it goes beyond what has been kind of the law of the land.
Yeah, and let's first take a look at how it impacts workers. Basically, what this does is to tell an employer, if a union tries to organize their employees, that employer is required to give the union a list of all their employees, their addresses, their phone numbers, their email addresses, their work schedule. And so obviously there's a lot of private information that's shared with the union, and the union has no restrictions on how they use that information, showing up at their door, bombarding them with voicemails, emails on expected emails, etc. Secondly, it would a fundamental underpinning of our federal labor laws is that the union gets to represent the employees only if they can demonstrate that they have the majority support of the employees to choose that union to be their agent for collective bargaining. What the PRO Act would do would be to undermine that secret ballot election that is used to determine that majority support. And the way it does that is that let's assume there's an election and the union loses that election. Well, the National Labor Relations Board can overturn the results of that election if the union can demonstrate that they had a majority of what are called authorization cards signed by the employees. Now, the difference, think about the difference between a secret ballot election where you get to make your free choice known without anybody looking over your shoulder, and the coercive environment where a colleague, a coworker, a union representative comes up to you and says, hey, I need you to sign this authorization card so that we can have a union here. Well, you might want to avoid a confrontation with a colleague or a stranger and shrug your shoulders and sign it, knowing that you'll be able in the future to make your true intentions known through the secret ballot election. What the NLRB would be to throw that away and impose the union on people against their will.
This is an interesting situation for Virginia, which has been a right to work state.
Correct.
So I would imagine the change for folks in Virginia would be probably magnified compared to other states and commonwealths.
Yeah, you raise a really good point there, because the PRO Act would significantly undermine Virginia's right to work status. And the way that right to work state laws work is they say that a union security clause, which requires an employee to join the union and pay union dues as a condition of employment, that clause is not enforceable in state court. What the PRO Act does is it maintains that prohibition on enforcing the union security clause, but it adds another layer to it and says, notwithstanding that right to work status, the employee can be required to pay what's known as an agency fee to the union for their fair share of negotiating and administering a collective bargaining agreement. So the employee, whether they want the union or not, is still going to have to provide financial support for the union under this provision.
I guess I'm in a strange situation where I've worked in a union shop before, and it was a different type of environment. I was in retail, and I didn't think it did anything for me. Whereas now later in life, I work someplace else. It's a non-union situation. Of course, I'm in the Commonwealth. So there are very few places that have any kind of union representation. But if there was ever a time, it's probably been the last couple of years with healthcare and things like that, where I would have wanted someone on my behalf to be pushing someone and saying, hey, this is, they need some help back here. So from a construction worker standpoint, you know, I'm caught in the middle a little bit, because on one hand, I don't want to pay dues and get nothing. But on the other hand, I do want someone in my corner fighting for me.
Right. Well, and you raise a legitimate point, and that's why employees should have the free choice to make that determination. Well, let me explain to you, though, some of the impact in the construction industry and other industries as well by something else that's in this bill, which is repealing the prohibition on secondary boycotts. And a secondary boycott is where the union has a dispute with one employer. But in order to put pressure on the employer that they have the dispute with, they try to do damage to a secondary employer so that they feel the pressure tell the first employer where the union has its dispute to acquiesce to the union's demand, or they'll cease doing business with that employer. So basically, if you are So let me give you a real life example here. So you're a hospital, and you hire a contractor to build a new wing on the hospital. And you have the hospital contracts with a non-union general contractor. And the unions want to put pressure on the hospital to change contractors. So under the PRO Act, they could do something that they're right now not legally entitled to do, which would be to erect establish a picket line in front of the hospital so that they would encourage the union employees of the hospital not to show up for work. So let's assume that's done. The nurses union sees that picket line. They want to act in solidarity with their counterparts in the union construction trades. So they stay home from work, forcing the hospital to shut down, and the hospital has the choice of going then to that contractor and saying, "Hey, I need you to sign a contract with the unions or I have to kick you off the job." So basically, if you're that employee of that non-union contractor, you could lose your job because the hospital has put the pressure on the contractor to be union and only hire union labor.
I guess as an employee, I would kind of know that is a risk if that were a situation, meaning union and non-union shops. And I can tell you in the media, it's a mess. Mm-hmm. I know how that works out. I would also say, I can't imagine nurses not going to work if they haven't walked off the job already within the last 12 months, considering what they've dealt with.
but think about teachers' unions today and the leverage that they've had on keeping schools closed.
Well, now you're preaching to the choir a little bit. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So basically, that type of leverage. What the PRO Act does, it gives every union additional economic weapons that really upset the balance in collective bargaining that exists today. So if you think it's a great idea for the teachers union to basically have unilateral decision on whether or not a school opens, then the PRO Act is for you.
So I have to imagine when a bill like this comes out or an idea like this comes out, usually at some point it made sense. So do you have any thoughts on what was the original intent and what was the idea here?
Well, I think the original intent was to make sure that there's a level playing field that allows employees to exercise their statutory right. Instead, what's happened is that the AFL-CIO has decided to add every every labor law measure that they have sought over the last 50 years in one package to be able to have to be able to organize more employers and also to have more leverage with those employers at the bargaining table and beyond.
I guess the number one negative to me that I would see in this, would be that small companies would mm-hmm. completely be thrown out of any opportunity here, because you're not going to walk onto a union job site. I just don't see that happen.
Yeah. Well, I think the harm for small companies is a provision in the bill that says, if the union is successful in organizing the employees and the employer and the union cannot reach agreement on a first collective bargaining agreement within 90 days, then the agreement is submitted to a panel of three arbitrators who probably know nothing about the industry that employer's in and certainly don't know anything about their business. But they are the ones who then would write the collective bargaining agreement that governs the relationship between the union and the employees. And the employer has basically lost their ability to manage their workforce.
So, Stephen, I guess, is there any hope that, sometimes these bills have provisions taken out or folks, mm-hmm. ask for them to be changed? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there a way for this bill to be mended, in your opinion, to work for everyone?
No, I don't think so. I think I don't think there's any incentive for the unions to do that right now. It's likely going to pass the House this week. All bets are off on the Senate. As long as the filibuster rule remains intact, then that's the business community's best defense against this. But if you were to take away the filibuster rule, then all bets are off on whether or not this becomes law.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on it. I appreciate your time and the information. Stephen Sanders, CEO mm-hmm. of the Associated General Contractors mm-hmm. of America, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Carl. Take care.